Welcome to the Weekly Word, Dear. I'm your host, Adrian Dayton.
Good morning and good afternoon to those of you in the UK. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Adrian Dayton, and the question we're asking today is social media used by lawyers in the UK really that different? And to answer this question, we have on the call two excellent UK lawyers to help us flesh this out a bit. We also want to thank our sponsor from LexisNexis. We have Martindale Hubbell Connected that is making this international call possible. And we want to remind everybody that this coming Thursday, they'll be putting on a free conference call entitled
the conference.
Navigating the Ethical Pitfalls of Social Media. That's called Just for Lawyers, and you can join the call through Martindale Hubbell Connected.
The conference.
Now, for today's call, those of you that are on Twitter, feel free to tweet about the call. The hashtag is #UKAD. And if you don't know what a hashtag is, then you're going to learn something in today's call. So for those of you that have joined the call and this call in the past, the formats, just to quickly introduce some of our outstanding guests here, want to start first with, we have Brian Inkster. He won the Solicitor of the Year Law Award in Scotland in 2006, founder of Inkster Solicitors, the first Scottish law firm to Twitter. And he's also fundraising for Habitat for Humanity. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me along today.
Yeah, so good to have you. And I've heard on Twitter over the last few days that you're also quite a good tango dancer. Is that correct?
I wouldn't believe anything that Chris Sherlicker tells you.
Okay. All right. Speaking of Chris, Chris Sherlicker is also joining us. He's London Law Firm on Twitter, and on his Twitter bio it says, Chris Sherlicker is founding partner of Silverman Sherlicker LLP, a full-service London Law Firm, recently described on Twitter as coolest lawyers in London. And is that true, Chris?
Absolutely true, yes.
All right.
I was dubbed on Twitter that by somebody else, so I decided that I would use it.
Yeah, absolutely. If someone else has said it, you might as well print it, right? So, all right, great. And then finally, we have Rory Weber with us, Mr. RX on Twitter. He is part of the Martindale Hubbell Connected international team, and you know, not single-handedly, but he's building an international community of lawyers through really this great tool that's improving all the time, Martindale Hubbell Connected. Thanks for being with us, Rory.
Thanks, Adrian. Cheers.
Yeah. Now I feel kind of out of it here. You know, everyone has these really brilliant accents, and you know, I have this American accent. So I'll apologize and try to ask questions to get you know, those great accents as much as possible here. So now, often in these calls, we kind of hold some of the best stuff for last. But I want to get kind of right to the juice, and that is, I'd love it if Brian and Chris, can you share a few of your success stories with us? What are some of the good things that have happened as a result? A direct result or indirect result of your using social media? Maybe we can start with you, Brian.
Well, I've met Chris, so that was a good thing. And you, of course.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the thing, that it sort of enables you to meet a whole range of people that you would never have met or encountered otherwise, and allows, you know, things to lead on from that. And you know, I think that's one of the good things about it and why it's called social media.
Yeah, absolutely. How about for you, Chris?
Well, you asked what the question is, what successes have we had on Twitter? And I think you've got to be a little bit careful when you're talking about success on Twitter, because it's a process in which you engage. And I think most lawyers hanging on this call are going to say, well, is it worth it from a client-getting point of view? And yes, it is. And I have had some clients through being on Twitter. So to, you know, to get straight to the chase on that one, I have had a major client join me on Twitter who has not only become a major client, but has become a supplier to my firm and has also referred quite a large telecommunications company to me as well. So it is worth it, but if you divide the number of clients you get by the number of tweets you sent out, you have to do a lot of tweeting to get a client. So it's not worth it. And I think it's a process that you engage in. And as Brian says, it's not quite as direct as I'm on Twitter because I want to get a client. The relationships you form through Twitter lead on to other things, and it's an evolving process.
Yeah, absolutely. I use the example that Twitter is kind of like this giant cocktail party. And being part of this giant cocktail party, it gives you opportunities to talk to really phenomenal people, to anybody that you really can strike up a conversation with. But it still requires that you step into that circle, that you ask good questions, that you post and say interesting things. And well, that's great. I'd love to hear about those successes. So, now how about you, Brian? Have you had any successes of those type, or business? Not direct large client type work, but in the way that Chris has described. But I think a lot of these things, and it's a question probably come on to, is the question of sort of return on investment and so on. But I think that it's very difficult sometimes to measure what is actually coming through in a business perspective as a result of Twitter, because Twitter leads to other things that leads to other things, and it may be that Twitter was responsible for some of the things that are happening in Inkster, but it's very difficult to directly say that is the case, because it's part of a bigger picture. But certainly, it's clear that the profile of myself and my firm has been raised considerably over the past year as a result of Twitter. We've had lots of appeared in the press, been interviewed by magazines. Before coming on this call this afternoon, I was being interviewed by the Metro for a property article they're doing on Wednesday in the Metro paper about the use of Twitter in selling properties. And it's these sorts of things that you can't really quantify, but you're being asked and quoted in magazines and papers as a result of your use of the social media. And as a result of that, your profile has been raised. People are hearing about you, and people might come through to you through other means. Maybe following Wednesday, when our name appears in the Metro, there might be people phoning up wanting to sell the properties. It'll be through reading the Metro, but that would have arisen through our use of Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting because that reminds me of some statistics that I looked at that was talking about Twitter use among general counsel of Fortune 500 companies. And there's a very small percentage that are actually using Twitter. And so people say, well, how am I going to get in front of the decision makers on Twitter? But every major news publication in the world, literally, has people with their ear to the ground on Twitter. And so those press opportunities are extremely valuable, and the ink, as they call it, is great. But more than that, it's, one of the rules of sales is that generally for someone to buy your service, no matter what you offer, you need to have six or seven touches with that person. And so Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, blogs, what any of these, is really another way to have another point of contact and give you an advantage over your competitors. So it sounds like you both have had some success there. Now, next question, let's kind of rewind a little bit. How did you get started using social media? And maybe, Chris, you can answer this question first.
Absolutely. Well, I started tweeting on Twitter in March 2009, and it more or less coincided, I'm afraid, with the Fry lift incident, when celebrity Stephen Fry got stuck on the 26th floor of a building in central London and was sending out tweets until he was rescued, and that kind of amused me. And around about the same couple of weeks, there were a number of references to Twitter on the news and in newspapers, and I just decided to investigate it. And when I got 5 followers, I was absolutely delighted, and we were happy to put on our blog as a major achievement. But what I've since realized is that it was around about March 2009 that the whole of Twitter exploded across the world. And in fact, if you look at the graph of Twitter users, it just goes into a vertical rise around about March, April 2009. Mm-hmm. And so I was simply a part of another phenomenon that was happening around about that time, I think.
Yeah, excellent. One of my friends on Twitter is Kukumito77, but he gives this analogy that it's like, those who were on Twitter before March of 2009, it's kind of like they were in the lunch line first. And so, they figured the stuff out while everyone else was kind of, still spinning their wheels.
Absolutely, and I think there's a lot of people in the UK still standing in the lunch line.
Right. Well, and to that aim, a shameless plug real quick, but
That's really why back in May, I wrote my book, Social Media for Lawyers, Twitter Edition, because it takes some time to figure this out, and my hope was to speed up the process. And so for everyone that's on this call, the ARC group in London published this book, and they've offered to reduce their price for anyone on this call to £70 or $95. So simply email me, info@adriandayton.com, if you would like that discounted price with the code AD1. And
anyway, what fascinates me about Twitter is this instant conversation.
And this call is really not just about Twitter, but obviously the three of us are very passionate Twitter users. But what's really unique about Twitter is in real time you can search any conversation that's going anywhere in the whole world. And the international angle is fascinating. You know, I never would have met either of you. I never would have met Rory either, who's on the call. And I think that's one of the benefits of a network like Martin Bell Hubble Connected, that it can help you kind of cross borders. Rory, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how attorneys on the call that are interested in international law can use Martin Bell Hubble Connected to kind of add that to their marketing mix.
Thanks, Adrian. Before I go on, I just want to talk to Chris's point about Twitter. You're certainly in the UK. I mean, as with any kind of new technology, and especially in the legal profession, which are quite reticent to using new technology, there's an educational process. I mean, and there's a lot of education that's required, certainly in the UK, and you know, part of this is of this call is helping to support that. But what we're finding is, as more UK lawyers are seeing the benefits of social media and online social networking, we're certainly seeing an increase in numbers on Connected and obviously in Twitter. But to talk to your points about international connections, I mean, what we're seeing is, and a shameless plug here, and apologies, but I'm following Adrian, so it can't be that bad. what we're doing on Connected is we're seeing quite a few, and I say quite a few, we've got 25,000 members at the moment, so just shy of that, and that's globally. We're seeing in-house counsel or large law firms who, you know, they're looking at a matter that covers international borders, and they're looking for maybe a boutique in-region firm. They're getting on Connected, and because we've got members from over 140 countries, not a plug there, but you know, it helps them to do the things that people want to do on social media, which is about engaging, you know, so and listening and sharing and connecting. So if they're interested in maybe taking a long list of potential firms that they're working with and using the various blog and forum posts that people are placing on Connected to distinguish between those firms and then using the survey to connect with them. So I'm going to end the plug now, but you know, we're seeing quite a lot of activity.
Well, I think this is Chris Sherlicker, and I think the international aspect of it is actually quite interesting. Because it is an international legal community. And we have a lot of clients and contacts in the States. We don't have many in Turkey, but one of my followers is a Turkish lawyer. His Twitter address is @TurkishLawyer, and we've got to know each other on Twitter. I have actually referred trademark work to him, and he has referred to me a contested probate matter in London. And it is an international arena, and I think that's very useful.
Yeah, excellent. I think that's very, very helpful. And what Twitter and some of these other social media platforms are doing is they're bringing about the death of what I like to call, the cold call. There's no reason anymore to make cold calls. You can do all your due diligence and start a conversation online so that the first time you talk to someone, you have a pretty good idea of, you know, what their personality is, how, you know, whether or not you want to do business together. And it really is a fantastic tool in that way. And so, you know, that being said, you know, all of us have had these great experiences. I mean, this call, just to have this international connection, I know there's people joining this call from Italy, from all over the United States, and from all over the, Europe. So the big question, there's kind of two big questions remaining. First of all is, how do you find time to make social media part of your daily life? I mean, all lawyers have, especially busy, successful lawyers, have a problem with bandwidth, you know. Adding another thing up to their plate is kind of intimidating. Brian, could you tell us how you've been able to make that work?
Well, I think it's social media, and so you can do it in your social time, not necessarily in your working time. It doesn't need to be part of your 9-to-5 or longer day. And, you know, I tend to find that when I'm using Twitter, it's more likely of an evening. I may do a small tweet or two first thing in the morning, just see what's going on, update people on things. Then I might not be on Twitter again until evening time. And so it doesn't need to eat into or affect your working day. And I'm sure that most people that I'm tweeting with are doing it out with their working time.
Yeah. You could also do it at any time during the day. So mm-hmm. if you're waiting for a train or you're sitting in the back of a cab and you've got nothing else to do, I think I send about 99% of my tweets out from my iPhone, and it's just mm-hmm. very easy to do. And so what you're doing is you're using those 2 or 3 minutes that you would otherwise just be staring out a window, probably doing something which is rather more constructive.
Excellent.
Likewise, at lunchtime, you might have gone out for lunch with somebody, but rather than that, you might be having a sandwich at your desk, and you can do a tweet or two whilst you're eating your sandwich.
You can tweet about what's in your sandwich.
But I wouldn't do that, I don't think.
Well, I think this is a really important point for all of the callers, and a lot of people calling in already know this, but when you first start on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, when you're getting started, there's a certain awkwardness. I mean, it's not part of your daily life, and so a lot of people get on for the first time and they see all these crazy things going on, they see these hashtags, the number sign code, and they say, I don't get this, and they don't come back for 5 or 6 months, you know. And so really the challenge is, how do you overcome that kind of awkwardness? And I read this article this last week, overcoming awkward. How do you get past that so that it can be part of your routine, so that you can check your Twitter like you check your email or your voicemail, you know, because when it becomes just kind of part of the minutia of your life and not a distraction, but just kind of part of your process, I mean, I really think that's where you can have success.
And so, along with that, we've kind of addressed this next question, but I think it's still worth asking. What is the return on investment?
What's the ROI of social media use? And what do you think? You know, I'll put that up for anyone that would like to answer it.
I'll try and answer it. I mean, I think, first of all, one should look back 5 years from now and answer the question. But it is a way of finding people who you need to find, either because you need to be providing services to them, or, and this is just as important, they need to be providing services to you. Because it's a very time-efficient way of meeting people, checking them out, getting into a conversation with them, and possibly getting onto the DM direct message stream, and then onto the email and the telephone. And by the time you get to that point, you know them quite well, you've read their blogs a few times, you know what they're about. And actually, we've met quite a few people who are providing services to my law firm that I have only met through Twitter, and that includes people who are building blogs, people who are providing professional development programs for lawyers in my firm, and mm-hmm. and other people. So it's an incredibly time-efficient way of meeting all of those people, and actually in quite a pleasurable way.
That's a really interesting point. Not only the fact that you're able to find a business, but people that sell to you are able to have better access to you if they know those tools.
Yeah, and you can allow them to sell to you within the context of that social media relationship that's perhaps developed over a number of months.
Excellent. How would you answer that question, Brian?
Similar, but we are seeing people the whole time that you're connecting with. I think I said this earlier, it's making connections with people and becoming friendly with them through Twitter, and it leading to other things, meeting up with them and potentially leading to other opportunities, maybe being asked to guest blog on somebody's blog, which wouldn't have happened otherwise had you not been tweeting with them, being asked to do interviews and so on. It's all that, just the connections that are made and moving that forward in some way. So it's more than just Twitter. It's taking it off Twitter and doing something else with it that maximizes the use of Twitter, I think.
And that's a great point. And it's interesting that people ask this ROI question as if there's a solid return on investment to advertising, or a solid return on investment to using the telephone or to attending cocktail parties. And the truth is, it's really tough to quantify those things. And with social media, it actually may be easier to quantify your return on investment because you can specifically trace back where these relationships started. You can trace back what article they read or what article they responded to or what question was asked that helped you engage with these people. And so so the return on investment, you know, it is there. But as always, it's tough to quantify when it's only one piece in your whole marketing mix.
And I don't think people should get too hung up on that whole return on investment, because Twitter is also fun. It's a social thing, and it's something that people shouldn't be looking at as this is purely something I'm going on to because I'm going to get business out of it. It's something that you're doing because you're doing it in your social time, because you're meeting other people, you're enjoying doing that, and if business comes out of it, you know, all good and well. If it doesn't, so what? You know, there's more to it than just producing business.
Yeah, well, that's a great point.
It's a ton of fun. I mean, it is really enjoyable to be meeting other fascinating attorneys, other professionals. That's one of the great qualities.
And so this is one of the questions that we said we would ask in this call.
And I think in America there's this perception that professionals in the UK are far more serious. You know, maybe Twitter, just in the name of it, would kind of keep attorneys in office. Is there any truth to that? How do you think it's perceived by your colleagues that you are, you know, that Brian, you're the Scotland Twitter master and you're London, you, Chris, right?
They probably think we're both a pair of idiots doing it, but there'll be a perception out there, I think, by a certain number of solicitors that it's just not the done thing. And why are these people going on and sharing things on Twitter? And I think there'll be a huge amount of that. And I mean, there is only really a small number of UK lawyers using Twitter at the moment. There's not a huge number. And me and Chris probably know them all.
Yes, we both do.
And whilst you're seeing, I've seen recently more firms joining in, maybe than individuals, but the firms, you know, when a firm creates a Twitter stream, it's very difficult for it to interact in the same way as an individual can, and all they can really do is sort of use it as a news stream for the firm. And I think people within the firms need to take control of it and say, you know, I'm going to be the Twitterer, or we're going to have several Twitterers in our office, and we're going to actually go out there and interact with people in the same way as Chris and I do.
Well, that's interesting, Brian, and I was going to ask you that, because mainly through ignorance, when I started tweeting, in the name of London London law firm. And I know that you've got more than one blog. One is a personal one and one or two firm blogs. And I've kind of adopted this legal fiction that some of my tweets are about terribly serious legal matters and some of them are about how to mix the perfect Manhattan cocktail. Yeah. And that actually doesn't work for me, but that's just the way it's gone.
But I think that does work for you, and I think that works well. And I think if you had set up just a Silverman Sherlocker blog, it wouldn't have had that same effect, and it wouldn't have been as successful for you. When I started tweeting, which was only a month ahead of you in February last year, I started up an Inkster stream. And I started tweeting from Inkster, not from Brian Inkster. Mm. I registered the name Brian Inkster, and my first tweet was, follow tweets at Inkster. And my view when I started up was that I would be tweeting about the law and what we were doing in our office and things to do with Inkster, nothing to do with me personally. But I soon realized that it didn't work like that. That, you know, you had to have an individual tweeting to other individuals to make it work, because, you know, taking Adrian's analogy at a cocktail party, if you get an invite to the cocktail party, you don't get an invite addressed to Inkster solicitors or addressed to Silverman Sherlocker. You get an invite addressed to Brian Inkster or to Chris Sherlocker. So, it's the individual that has to participate, that has to go to the cocktail party, not the legal entity of the firm.
Yeah,
and that's such a great point. So many of these major firms, they have the youngest associate or a paralegal sending all the tweets out, and they don't realize they're missing the chance to engage. If you think about it, I mean, nobody wants to hire a lawyer. They want to hire a person that they think they can, you know, have a beer with. You know, I mean, they want to hire someone that they get along with. And so I really tell people, you've got to blur
the personal and professional a little bit, because it's going to make you far more approachable online. It sounds like both of you have made that same realization.
I think that's absolutely right. And if you go onto the Twitter site when you first register, the question on the screen says, what are you doing right now? And actually, that's the last thing people want to know. One of the big mistakes we made when we first, or I made when I first started tweeting, was telling people that actually we just had this major victory and all the rest of it. They don't want to know. They're not interested at all. They're much more interested in getting to know people. And I think there's an old marketing adage which goes that if they're going to instruct you, they need to know you, they need to like you, and they need to trust you. And until you get over those three hurdles, they're not ever going to instruct you. But I think where Twitter is useful is it enables you to get to know people over a period of time so that actually they do get to know you, like you, and trust you. And then possibly they may instruct you, or they may not. They might instruct Brian.
Right. Well, okay, well, so now we're talking
kind of in very general terms, and I want to kind of try and drive a few specifics and takeaways people can get from this. Now, a lot of you on the call, people that I meet when I speak in conferences, you know, I'll ask them, how many of you have a profile on LinkedIn or Twitter or Mind the Hubble Connected? And everybody will raise their hand. But then I say, how many of you have done anything more than just complete a profile? And we'll have, you know, less than 10%. And so, maybe Rory, you can help out here. What's kind of the next step if you want to get past just being on the surface of a site like Mind the Hubble Connected?
Well, to be honest, it really depends on the objective. So if you're just on Connected to make those network connections, then you can search our member database of 25,000 members globally, and you can find those people that are relevant to you based on maybe you're looking for in-house counsel in a specific region or organization even, and you can invite them to connect. If you're hoping to make a name for yourself amongst the rest of your marketing communication plan, then obviously, you know, you can visit the various forums and blogs on the massive amount of legal professional topics and make a name known by posting comments or even hosting your own blog. If you're interested in appreciating what your potential clients are doing and need and their views, then you can look at their blogs, their comments on various forums. And if they're potentially interested in your experience and your expertise, then, you know, the opportunity is there to connect with them. It's like I say, it's really down to you. Go ahead, Adrian.
Well, that's a really good point for any type of social media. I mean, for blogging and anything else, if people get on social media and they want to blast out what they're about, they want to, you know, kind of vomit their goodness out, just hoping someone will see that they're great and hire them. But really, kind of the indirect approach that's much more powerful is, you know, commenting on other people's blogs or passing on other people's good content. It will tend to be noticed and give you more acceptance in the community. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in a community like Connected and others as well, we say if you're reading, then you're listening to someone else. And if you're writing, then you're talking to them. So we all know in a conversation, and if you want to build a rapport and a relationship with someone, you have to do a lot more listening than probably talking. So I would say first thing, get onto Connected and read. Do a hell of a lot of reading. There is so much free content available, and we're talking about social media in general. Just last month, we had a webinar with a number of social media experts who are all legal professionals, talking about their experience and sharing best practice, and that recording is still available on the site. But it's you know, there's a lot to learn, and I would say that most people on the call who are Twitter account holders, the first thing I certainly did is for about 2-3 weeks, I just read. I didn't make many connections because I didn't know what I was doing. And once you're a bit comfortable with it, then you can move forward and, you know, post that blog or post a comment on a forum and try and make those connections, you know, indirectly and directly too.
That's a great takeaway for anybody on this call who's just getting started is to really just start listening, start reading, see, you know, look for who the thought leaders are, see what they're saying. You know, you're going to learn a lot because, the currency you have online is the good information that you share for free, and that's how you get that status. Now, with this in mind, Chris and Brian, what are the best sites or the best social networks or the ones that you've enjoyed the most? Because it seems both of you use quite a few.
Will I go for this one? I mean, principally, I'm using Twitter, but I also use LinkedIn. For example, even just yesterday, I posted on three news groups that I'm groups that I'm a member of about this call. So, I mean, you can do that, and you can spread the word about things. If you're a member of a group, you can put a news item up, and other people will get to see it. You can update your profile. You can see what other people are doing. And I think the LinkedIn tends to be people that, well, certainly for me, on the whole, it's people that you know quite well, and not necessarily people that are tweeting, but people that you've got existing connections with. Although I would say that I've been adding to my LinkedIn connections through my Twitter connections, so there's a bit of an overlap there, but there'll be people that are on one that are not on the other, so you can keep in touch with them and find out what they're doing and connect with them and using different user means. And I think the LinkedIn oblique Twitter thing works quite well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's a combination of all of these tools is what makes the most sense.
How about for you, Chris?
I'm afraid I'm a pure Twitterer. I don't use any other form of social media, although I one of my New Year's resolutions was actually to investigate LinkedIn, and I'm kind of waiting for your book, Social Media for Lawyers, LinkedIn edition. When's that going to happen?
It's in the work. It's in the work. Actually, we're putting together with this, a group of authors. We're putting together a book using Google Wave, and it's the Lawyer's Social Media Handbook, and it's going to cover LinkedIn and a number of different sites. So there may be an online free edition available before we have a publisher lined up. So keep an eye out for that.
I think
there are a number of these tools that you really have to find what works for you and what works for your personality. A lot of people, they don't like the idea that their tweets can just be seen by anybody. But really, that's part of the power to them. And so I want to remind everyone on the call that feel free to jump over to my blog, adriandayton.com/blog. There is a roll call there where you can introduce yourself so everyone that's part of the call can see who's listening in, and you can ask questions. And what we're going to do now, as we do in many calls, is and we have a few more questions, but I want those in the audience to start thinking. You can press star six if you'd like, if the count six, I guess it is, count six, if there's a question that you'd like to ask from any of our guests. And while we're waiting for that, just remind everyone, you know, the discount available for my book, Social Media for Lawyers, Twitter edition, just £70 in the UK, $95 in the US. Send an email, info@adriandayton.com. If you're interested, I can have the material sent out to you.
You shouldn't have to plug your own book like that, Adrian. I would say it is actually a very good book, and it will take you 4 hours or so to read it, and it will save you about 4 months of getting it right on Twitter. So it's well worth it, in my view.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, and I appreciate the review you wrote of my book early on. I really appreciate that. So one other question I'm kind of interested to find out. Lawyers tend to be in the U.S., and I don't know how this is in the U.K., they tend to be something more, they like the privacy, and that's part of the hesitation to enter into the social media realm. But I've been following over the last couple of days, Laura, there's been kind of a raging debate over open versus closed networks. You know, kind of open network being something like Twitter, where anybody can watch, or closed, like public connected, where it's kind of lawyers only.
What are your kind of thoughts on that whole debate that's going on?
So, you're right. I mean, Twitter is completely open, and for certainly in the UK, we're seeing a lot of people going, they're quite scared, because once it's out there, it's out there. You can't take it back. There is no delete. There is no, even adapt. So certainly what we're seeing is, and we struggle with these issues all the time at Martin Albert Connected, because, having created this sort of walled garden on the site, we're always thinking what content is better exposed to the wider public on the internet, like Twitter, and what should remain behind that closed down garden. And, our thinking and there's research that supported this is that lawyers are basically more willing to engage on a site like Connected if the site's behind that walled garden. And it's, I mean, so far this has proved to be the case, and you know, that, I think that's evident from the number of members we have and the ongoing discussion and, you know, that you mentioned before. What's the answer? To be honest, there isn't an obvious answer, and certainly not one that everyone would agree on and where the line should be drawn, but it's definitely worth having a conversation. And so we're open for the conversation on Connected, as you've seen, Adrian, yourself, and so we're constantly listening to our members to hear their views, and if there are sufficient, if there's a quorum on what content should be made public and what should stay private, we're open to making those changes to support that.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's interesting, and I think, you know, it's going to appeal to different people. I mean, to some people, they really like to get the attention, but others are far more cautious, and it's going to appeal to them to have this kind of more, more exclusive group. And I think that's part of why, you know, attorneys enjoy, networking with, you know, with their local bar association so much. I mean, they really enjoy being just with this kind of group of attorneys. Now, some would argue, you know, the best networking is going to be outside of that group, but social media really gives, you know, provides both opportunities. And so, anyway, so really want to encourage anybody, if you have any questions for our callers, just #6, jump on in. You know, we'd love to hear. Yeah, I know it's probably kind of intimidating because we're international with a lot of people on the call, but, you know, we'd love to hear your questions.
The conference is now in talk mode.
It's like someone has some music raging there in the background.
Brian, are you dancing at the moment?
Don't think this is tango music.
Some tango music there. Yeah. If you have music playing in your background, you can hit *6 to turn that off.
The conference is now in talk mode.
We won't be able to talk very well with the music ongoing.
Right.
The conference is now in silent mode.
Right. So, for example, one of the
kind of innovators in alternative fee arrangements here in the U.S. is an attorney by the name of Patrick Lamb with the Valorum Law Group. And one of his attorneys asked the question, we're having a few problems with buy-in from the firm because we're worried about ROI and which forms of social media provide the best ROI.
And it seems like for all of us on the call, we're pretty convinced that Twitter is definitely one of those, as well as LinkedIn. Any other thoughts maybe on that?
I think it takes a little while to persuade colleagues that it's a good idea. And in fact, when I first started tweeting, most of my partners were rolling their eyes, and so was my wife. But actually, I think I've got 4 partners who are on Twitter now. Uh-huh. And I'm not quite sure about Mrs. London Law Firm yet, but we may well be for long. So I think that there is a learning process. I think it takes a bit of time. I would advise that attorney just to keep going.
Yeah.
It's not going to be for everyone, and there's certain people out there that I think will just be not want to go anywhere near it because of the type of person they are, and you know that'll be their choice. But in any firm, I think you'll be able to find at least one person, if not several, who would be willing to do it. You know.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges is some of the people in management, you know, some of the baby booms, as we call them here in the U.S., you know, they personally have no interest in using it, and so they may make rules based on their perception of it. But if you think about the technology adoption curve, you have the early adopters and you have the early majority, and these tools, you know, they're really no longer tools of the techie people, of the tech elite. These are tools that are so easy that anybody can use. But having said that, it's most likely that only that early majority, maybe that half of the population, really would actually be a good fit for using them.
That's the potential in the aging. So I give firms the recommendation that, you know, find those champions within the firm that can help be examples for that early majority, and that will make it work for them. One thing that strikes me, Chris, is that you know, you have a lot of very young attorneys at your law firm, and you're probably using these tools more effectively than the younger attorneys. Would you say that's true?
I think that was quite delicately put, if I might say so. Yeah, I mean, we have lots of people tweeting here, and I'm sure that some of them have personal accounts and some of them have professional accounts. And I'm not actually sure it's an age thing, although I think the age profile of UK tweeters is, you know, middle age, by which I mean over 40.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually quite good, because these people are, you know, in business, they're interesting people. They have
I have seen a bit of research on take-up of social media related to age, and they say the age generally where, to be honest, if you're not on, then you may not, unless you have a mind for new innovation, is around 37, which is quite interesting.
That is interesting. Well, and you know, what I always say is, it's far more, the people that are going to have the most success with these tools is not going to be the younger attorneys. It's going to be the more experienced attorneys that know how to develop relationships. They know how to be strategic in building relationships, because anybody can learn how to upload a photo on Facebook, or anybody can send a tweet, but it's a more rare skill to know how to, add value and kind of grow a relationship and take it to the next level where you're getting together for coffee or for lunch or whatever. And those skills, I think that's why Twitter is being more used by the middle age, because, they're seeing the practical application to their business.
Yes. I mean, return on investment, the only investment that's being made is an investment of time. There is no cost to being on Twitter. It is free. Where else can you get, every tweet is an advert, so, or could be. So where else can you get, I think I must have sent out 7,000 adverts for my firm, and each one was free. So, it's a time investment, and actually it doesn't take a lot of time. You don't need to spend hours on Twitter, although people do. I've been
guilty
of it myself from time to time. But you don't need to.
Well, and I think there's a learning curve to it. And I certainly, in
my first month using Twitter, it was
quite ridiculous. I mean, I was obsessed for my first month until I really figured it out, and I started to kind of build up a little bit of a following. So it is kind of time heavy at first, but now, people are surprised to hear that, I spend less than, an hour a day using the tools, because, I have work to do. I can't spend time using tools, but it's well worth that initial investment once you get going.
Occasionally you sort of have to pinch yourself and think, I've been on this a bit too long, and I've been chatting to Sharon QC about Motorhead t-shirts, and I've been speaking to Geek Lawyer and Info Bunny about gin, and there must be better things to be doing with my time. But having said all that, that's fun as well, and if you're doing it in your social time and you're having that interaction, so what? But as long as you're not spending all day on it. You can time yourself as well. You can. I got this tip from somebody that said have an egg timer on your desk and set it for 10 minutes, and that's your tweeting time.
I like that.
You can say that that's what you're doing, and when the egg timer rings, you stop. So that's a time management technique that you can use.
Right.
Well, you're talking about fun a lot. Any of your firm listening to this?
Sorry?
You're talking about having a lot of fun. Are any of your firm listening to this?
They might be listening to it after the event.
Actually, most of my firm's in a meeting with two people I met on Twitter at the moment.
Chris has fun with Twitter as well, with organising his Twitter parties and the like. And,
I was hoping you wouldn't mention that. one of the questions is, how do you get followers? And Twitter imposes limits on this. And one of the things I've been doing, and it's slightly bizarre and whimsical, is organising virtual parties on Twitter. And we have the virtual Twitter picnic party, which is highly entertaining. And then earlier, in October, I think it was, we had the Tilt the Earth early party, and Twitter had an early winter solstice party.
I joined in from Argentina on that one.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, and really, I mean, one of the things I like to do, I wrote an article about this just 2 weeks ago, but when I attend a conference, you know, I plan in advance, I set up searches on Twitter so I can talk to people that are going to be there, meet them in advance, so that we can set up dinner and breakfast appointments. And you know, so I arrive, and I'm already ahead of the curve because I've been able to have this communication in advance, which is really just amazing.
That is clever, yeah.
And it worked very effectively, the use of Twitter, for when we were fundraising for Habitat for Humanity when we went to Argentina in November. I was overwhelmed by the number of Twitter followers who donated to our cause when we were raising money for the project we were doing in Argentina, and from all over the world, from America, Canada, the UK, and it was quite amazing how just tweeting with people resulted in people being willing to donate money to the charity that you were fundraising for.
Excellent. Well, you know, and there's... It's really, we're really just at the tip of the iceberg
of what these tools can do, you know? And you know, I think a year from now, I don't know, maybe this type of call will seem unnecessary because everybody's going to be, in some form or another, engaging in these tools. But it's so exciting right now as everything grows and changes so frequently. So maybe what we can do, it sounds like we're kind of wrapping up, people want to really jump on and ask questions. We had a bunch of people going to my blog, aviation.com/blog, and signing in at the roll call. So feel free to jump on there, tell us who you are so everyone on the call knows kind of who's participated. We've had some great tweets sent out from Intellect Lawyer and a few other people. Let's see, who else do we have? Phil Mugin and Rosalie Cram. So if any of you want to jump on and ask a question, you know, feel free. We'd love to hear your thoughts. But otherwise, I think we're wrapping up here. But maybe what we can do is kind of a final question to each of you is, what do you see as the next couple of years? What will it hold for social media for lawyers? And maybe we can start with Brian and Chris and then Lori.
I think that we'll see more lawyers actually joining Twitter and the like and actually using it. And I think the take-up's been a bit slow in the UK, but I think we're gradually seeing more people looking at it and thinking that they should maybe be joining in. And I think we will see that growing. I'm sure we will.
I'm sure we will too, because in the UK, the advent of the Legal Services Act is making the legal profession highly competitive with non-lawyers and institutions coming into the market and offering legal services. So it behoves the private practice lawyers to start using the tools that are available to them to get their work elsewhere.
Yeah,
and I
think
that's going to assist.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you'll see that kind of in America too. You'll see a lot of legal work being outsourced, and so if the U.S. attorneys, don't have the advantage of this technology, then they're gonna be it's gonna be a losing proposition over the next couple of years.
And it takes a while to build up followers, so better get onto it.
That's true. How about you, Roy? What are your thoughts? What do you think the next couple of years?
I agree with the points made previously. It's becoming an increasingly competitive market, so obviously firms are going to need to use every tool available, including social media, to distinguish themselves from their competitors. And that'd be great, because I'm connected, but we're already waiting for more members to blog and post forums, etc. From the other side, from the firm that wants to learn more, I think because there are so many different sources of information and there are various devices that are converging those different sources, I think we're going to see more use of sort of content aggregators and various services that support that, certainly from a legal perspective. And as a final plug, that's something that we do at the moment on Connected with various lakes of Nexus content, but we'll be doing a lot more, I guess, in the future. So that's where I say it's going at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a great opportunity for technology companies out there.
The company that cracks the code, that figures out how they can put all of this information and all of your social media profiles into one tool that can manage everything and aggregate that information. I mean, that's going to be, and that's my prediction for the next year or two, that something's going to come along that's going to make all of this a lot easier, so that even, you know, even less tech savvy people, it doesn't take you, you know, 40 hours to figure it out. But again, this has been, it's been an outstanding call. I really want to thank all of you for your time. And for those of you that haven't joined this call before, you know, we try to hold these calls every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time. And I guess that's at 3 p.m. UK time, or GMT, I guess as they say. So if you have any questions you want addressed in future calls, feel free to send me an email, info@AdrianDayton. And again, if you're interested in getting the discount on my book, the code is AD1, if you want to use that discount code to buy it. But this has just been a great call. Thank you all so much, and look forward to seeing you all on Twitter.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, thanks.
Right. Great. Have a good one.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, okay. Adrian. Bye.
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 This has been Adrian Dayton, and thank you for joining us on the weekly
Word Dear.